We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
September is Hunger Action Month, a time when food banks and hunger relief organizations around the country come together to mobilize the public to support the fight against hunger. In this first hour of Focus, we'll be talking about hunger and nutrition and what's being done to feed people healthy food and the realities of eating on just $30 a week. That's the average benefit for someone who receives federal food assistance. In Illinois, that assistance comes in the form of a link card. I'm Kimberly Cronick, Director of Community Engagement at Illinois Public Media. And joining me in the studio this morning to talk about hunger, nutrition, and feeding people are Andrea Rundell, Director of Programs and Agency Relations at the Eastern Illinois Food Bank, and Jacqueline Hanna, General Manager of Common Ground Food Co-op in Urbana. Welcome, Jacqueline and Andrea.
Morning, Kimberly.
Hi.
Good to have you with us. I'll be honest, when I think about food banks, I really do, in my mind, have this idea that they're organizations that feed poor people. And honest, again, when I think of food co-ops, I think of affluent people buying healthy and expensive organic food. So that's the image in my head, and I know that's partially not true. So first of all, tell me, each of you, about who your organizations actually serve and what your missions are. And Andrea, let's start with you.
Okay. The Eastern Illinois Food Bank, our mission is really to get food out to food pantries and soup kitchens across our 14-county area in order to alleviate hunger. So our business is getting food in as inexpensively as possible, as you say, in order to get it out to people who are having a hard time being able to feed themselves and their families. We just keep going at it from that direction, but nutrition is really important too, and I think that's part of the connection between us and the co-op.
And also let me say, I know that the number of people and the kinds of people seeking emergency food assistance has changed over time. Tell us a little bit about that.
It really has. In the last few years with the economic downturn, what we've seen is a real explosion of people coming to food pantries trying to find ways to get food. We've gone up in the last 4 years 133%, and that's just astounding. Right now we're serving about 45,000 people per month with food to take home, feed their families, just in our 14-county area. So it's really, really grown. And what we've been finding, especially in the last several years, is that the people who are coming to food pantries are not any longer just the poorest of the poor, as it were. What we're finding is people who had been hanging on, had been managing, but because of the economy have just kind of fallen off the edge. And so there are a lot of people who are employed, who are astounded to find that they have to go and ask for help like this.
Okay. And Jacqueline, what are we looking at when we think of people who the food co-op serves?
Well, the mission of Common Ground Food Co-op actually started in serving underserved communities and people who are in need, which a lot of people don't know. Common Ground was founded by the Illinois DeSouthville Foundation, which is located at Springfield and Wright for many, many decades. We started in 1974, and at the time we were surrounded by a low-income community. And so actually there was a little bit of a recession going on in the 70s, as some people might remember. And they chose to go to the community and say, what is most needed in our neighborhood? And they said access to healthy food. There wasn't access to healthy, affordable food. The only food accessible to that neighborhood were community or corner grocery stores, like corner marts, which are the most expensive of the most expensive, and all junk food, of course. And so they were looking for a way to bring that healthy food in. And what they did was form a co-op. And a co-op is, of course, owned by the people who partake in it. Everyone purchases an equal economic share of it. And at the time, an economic share in the co-op was $1. And they all took that $1 a piece. They raised about $100. They borrowed some truck, and they started driving around to local farms and to the nearest source of organic food distribution, which at the time was in Wisconsin, filled up a truck, came back, and distributed it from the back of a truck. And that was the beginning of Common Ground Food Co-op. So it really started from how do we get healthy food into neighborhoods and into communities? How do we serve our community? And I think Common Ground has stayed very true to that, those roots in some ways, as much as possible. But our mission is to grow this access to sustainable and local foods for the entire community and to grow the strength of the community. And we've done that in many different ways. But yes, our big part of our focus has been getting local food from local farms, healthy food, accessible to the community and available to the community at all times. And part of that is making sure it's accessible to everyone. So there is this perception, and we've heard it a lot, that organic food is inaccessible, it's only for the affluent. And when we've done surveys of our owners and the people who patronize our store, we found that's actually not true. The average income level of those who shop in our store is $25,000 to $35,000 a year, which is well below the average American household. The average American income household now, I think, is around $45,000. And it's average for our area. Average for our area is somewhere in the 30s. But it's not the super affluent necessarily. It's all over the place. It was all different levels. I mean, that was the mid. What we found was much lower and much higher. We have many people who use food stamps to buy food in our store. And we're proud of that because we want it to be accessible to everyone. But at some point we said to ourselves, how do we make this even more accessible? How do we make people realize that this food can be accessible to everyone? And so we've been working very hard on that as well to make ourselves more accessible to the community.
Great. And we'll talk a little bit about one of your programs. I want to say, well, so the food co-op in Urbana and the food bank in Urbana, which serves 14 counties in Eastern Illinois, you actually have been working together.
Absolutely.
Tell us about that relationship.
The co-op's been really good to us for a number of years, holding a local foods cookout and fundraiser, raising $2,500 last year and $3,000 this year, as I recall.
Yes, that's correct.
So that's fantastic. That's just phenomenal. More interestingly, I think, because, you know, I'm on this end of the world, is the partnership we've been able to develop around the backpack program and getting more nutritious food into the backpacks that we send home with kids at risk of hunger for the weekend. That's been pretty cool altogether.
That's been really exciting, actually. I admit I also am really excited to talk about the backpack program. But in general, something that we work really hard on at Common Ground that our owners have actually made clear to us is important to them is that we make the link between a healthy, sustainable food system and food that's healthy and accessible to all, not just the privileged. And so we try and drive that home and really keep that in our minds that our goal is food for the community, healthy food for the community, and a healthy food system for the community by really playing up our relationship with Eastern Illinois Food Bank and keeping that in our minds, that we're not only making food accessible to ourselves, but hopefully reminding ourselves that we need to make sure food is accessible to our entire community. And so our biggest fundraiser, our biggest activity of the year is our local foods cookout. And this was our third annual. It was started as just a little idea on our porch right after we opened at Lincoln Square Mall. And there were about 80 people at the first one, which we weren't even expecting. And what it was is we had only local foods actually cooked by the local farmers. They were there grilling it up for you. You could meet your farmers, understand where your food came from, discuss with them, talk. We also had long banquet tables where you can sit with your neighbors, maybe people you've never met before, and discuss the food and discuss your interest in local foods and make connections. So a chance to build community and connect with the farmers, but also this opportunity to say really publicly that food is about accessibility for everyone. And so Eastern Illinois Food Bank is there with us. The director, Jim Hires, who is just wonderful, and their outreach, Cheryl's title is... Thank you. Cheryl, they come and hang out with us all evening and talk to people and talk about food, food accessibility and so forth. And I find that a lot of people walk away not finding out things they didn't know before. So that's a really exciting event. It grew from 80 people the first year to over 300 the second year, and we had just under 400 this year. So it's a growing event for us. And as you said, we raised just under $3,000 this year. We're very proud of that partnership.
And that money goes to the Eastern Illinois Food Bank, and that allows you and the food bank to purchase food, correct?
That's right.
And let's talk a little bit about that. Let's look at the kinds of food the food bank distributes to food pantries and soup kitchens and how that's changed over time, because we're looking today at hunger and feeding people and nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us, Andrea, how the food bank acquires food and how that's changed over the years and the kinds of food that people will be getting from the food bank.
Okay. excuse me. We get food in a variety of different ways. First and foremost, we get it donated on the national scale by the truckloads. That's the least expensive way for us to get food in. And that's what we really try and get to happen. So about 50-55% of our food comes that way. Another chunk of it comes through the USDA, food that we can get out to people through the commodity program. And then the remaining portion of the food that we get, we have to go and purchase. And this has been a real shift for us in the last 5 years. Where we used to have maybe 75, 80, 90% food donated, now, like I said, we're down about 56%. Manufacturing has changed. Distribution has changed so much in the last just 5 years. It's been a real crash. For the food bank system, we've relied on, since 1967, we've relied on there being overage in the system. We've relied on manufacturers going, okay, we're going to make a whole warehouse full of this, and when people order it, we're going to send it out. And, you know, when we have a bunch left, sort of when we're net at the end of that, we'll donate it to the food banks. And that's not happening anymore. What's happening is manufacturers are doing on-time manufacturing. So they don't make a warehouse full of stuff and have it sitting there. They wait until someone puts in an order and they make 50 cases of it and send that out. There's still some overage in the system. There's always going to be a little something going on there, but it's nothing like what it used to be. And that's how we've been able to leverage so well on the national scale for so long. So we're having to, as food banks, go back to those same manufacturers and say, okay, well, you know, you're not donating that to us anymore. We understand you can't. We understand you know, this is business. Perhaps you could sell it to us really inexpensively. Perhaps we could, you know, get in on that piece of it instead. So we're having to use our money differently. We, you know, previously what we were raising money for largely was getting the food here, trucking it. You know, it might cost us anywhere between $600 to $2,000 to get a truckload of free food just to our doorstep. And now we're also having to pay for the product. And that nutritionally makes a big difference to us because, you know, like any food drive, you know, you get all kinds of things in a food drive. People bring you this, people bring you that, and, you know, that's how it works out. Same thing on the national scale. On the national scale, it's like we're just doing an enormous food drive with trucks instead of single cans or something like that. So when we get donations in, sometimes it's exactly what we wanted and sometimes it's not exactly what we wanted. So, you know, maybe we get a big donation, whole truckload full of chips. Oh, boy, you know, that's not what I want to see on somebody's table, honestly. Nutritionally, I want to see something better out there. And so what we have to do is then go and purchase. And when we purchase for nutrition. We have to make the same balance, again, that scale of single household trying to make a balance of quantity of food, quality of food. We have to make that balance for, you know, 6 million pounds of food a year. So we're trying to get in better and better food and really be able to address the, you know, dietary diseases that are, you know, afflicting low-income people right now.
So one of the things I'm hearing then, first of all, the food bank can purchase, the purchasing power is much greater. If I were to, let's say at Walgreens, I can get a can of canned salmon on sale for $1.49, which is something I buy. I can give that to the food bank, which is a pretty nutritious item to donate.
Yep.
However,
shelf-stable protein, very good.
If I gave you that $1.49 in the food bank, you could buy many more cans of salmon than I could at Walgreens even on sale.
Absolutely.
Correct?
Absolutely. We still are able to manage the 1-to-10 ratio there. For every dollar that is donated to the food bank, we're able to leverage $10 worth of food.
So it's interesting because there's a lot of people who want to help, and those food drives, every year the mail carrier, I put food out. It's satisfying for me to donate food, yet I'm hearing that it's actually more powerful if I would donate money.
It really is. And, you know, don't mistake us. We're never going to turn down cans of food. But for, you know, bang for your buck, really, if you want to make the most out of that dollar donation, the $10 donation, we can turn it into $1 into $10 worth of food. That's what we really try and encourage people to do.
Okay, well, there's much more conversation, and we also would like you, the listener, to participate. This is Focus, our morning talk show on WILL AM. I'm Kimberly Cronick, and I'm talking with Andrea Rundell, Director of Programs and Agency Relations at the Eastern Illinois Food Bank, and Jacqueline Hanna, General Manager of Common Ground Food Co-op in Urbana. The topic is hunger, nutrition, and feeding people. Your calls are welcome at 333-9455 or toll-free 800-222-9455. Or if you wish, you can email will-talk@illinois.edu. Again, 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. When we talk about nutritious food and being able to eat healthy local and or organic food, Jacqueline, tell us a little bit about Common Ground Food Co-op's Food for All program. I know it's multi-layered. There's at least five components of it. Tell me how that program is intended to reach everybody, whether someone has WIC or a link card or someone makes, you know, $75,000 a year. Tell me about that.
Well, the program, as you said, is many-layered, and so we can reach many different audiences. And we started with reaching people who are most in need. We tailoring the program so we could first, how do we get it so people can come in the door and afford to participate in Common Ground if they're really deeply in need. So the first two arms of the program are our equity scholarship program. We actually have, to become an owner of Common Ground, you purchase a share of Common Ground. And it's not a very large amount, and it's refunded if you ever decide to leave, but you have to be able to do that. And you don't have to do that to shop, but it allows you to get access to discounts and so forth. And we wanted that to be economically fair. And so we actually hold a plant sale every summer. We sell organic food plants for the garden, and all that money we put aside for these equity scholarships. And so anyone who's on food stamps, disability, but also who is out of a job, so forth, whatever, we don't ask a lot of questions. We just ask you to fill out a form saying that you have economic need and what that economic need is, and then we will pay for that. So that's to make sure from our equity scholarship fund. So it's to make sure it's accessible to all, and those forms are available in the co-op and actually on our website as well. And then we also have our equity. We have a discount program, our Food for All discount program. Once you are an owner of Common Ground, you can apply for this discount for any economic need for 6 months, and we give you 5% off of all your food in the store. So this is just basic ground level getting you in the door, making it affordable for those who are most in need. And what we could do to maybe make that possible. And then we have several other pieces. We have our Staples program, which is the piece that I was from the start most excited about, which is we went through our store with our staff and identified 20 to 25 items that we thought these are basic core items. These are things that if a person really has to have, everyone has to have in their pantry to make a basic nutritious food for themselves to get through the week, like eggs, flour, we're talking about milk, carrots, we're talking about some real basics,
beans,
canned tomatoes, oats. And we took those items and we looked at how low we could take the price, and we took the price as close to wholesale as we could. We're selling them almost at wholesale. It was a challenging decision for us because those were also some of our best-selling items. And we did, of course, pick only an item or two from each category. And if we sell three kinds of eggs, we picked one egg where we did that. But it was a challenge to do that. We're like, how is this going to affect the store? Can we really afford to do this? And we found, actually, now we've been doing it for a year and a half that we can, and it's been a very effective program, and people really appreciate that. And then going a little further, what we found is it's not just let's get the price low. It's also an education issue. It's also that the reason organic food seems so expensive to everyone is because I'm gonna break a big secret about organic food to people. Well, first off, my entire staff, almost everyone on my staff, eats from Common Ground and from local farmers, and none of us are getting rich. And so we're like, how are we doing that? And when we shared notes and compared notes on how we were getting that done, what we all realized is we don't shop the center of the store. And what I call the center of the store is packaged goods. And also, although the frozen department is on the edge, and that's the other one, although we do shop that. Some of us do shop that for our local meat. But what a problem comes in with organic foods when we get to packaged food. Growing food organically isn't as cheap as growing it conventionally. There are many reasons for that, and I could spend all day on that. But part of it is the subsidies involved in farming and so forth. But it is more expensive to grow food organically. So you do see some price increase when you get to things like eggs or vegetables or so forth. But when you take those and then have to have a certified organic processing plant, which are few and far between, you have to pay to have it certified. You can only process certified food in that, so you can't be renting out your spare hours to someone else who wants to process some random food or whatever, as most factories do, you have more and more and more costs going in. And then eco-conscious, I put that in quotes, packaging. And when you get to the end product, you've added several layers of extra cost. And by the time you get to comparing, you know, let's say pasta on sale at Schnucks for 79 cents a bag, and then, you know, getting organic, let's say some kind of organic brand of pasta for $3 a bag. Mm-hmm. And you are seeing that kind of price differential, and I will not lie to anyone about that. If you want to pay for processed, convenienced American food that is organic, you're going to pay a lot. But if you shop the edges of the store, if you shop in the bulk foods department, bulk beans, bulk grains, eggs, if you're shopping for bulk amounts of organic vegetables that are in season and so forth, it can be very affordable. So how do we educate people to know that and to do that, to use those items? So we started two things. We have our Eating Healthy on a Budget class, which I teach, in which we distilled the entire staff's knowledge of how we afford eating really cheaply, organically, and started teaching that in January of 2009. I'm offer it every month since then, and I've learned a ton from my students. I'm always adding what I'm learning from my students. Actually, some of the best stuff I teach is from the people who've taken the class, and just keep adding to the collective. I kind of see it as a community collective knowledge bin that I just kind of reteach and regurgitate each month and add new pieces to. And then we also have our Food for All recipes, which is the part that actually maybe has gotten the most excitement from the community, because I think it speaks to people who do make $10,000 a year and people who make $70,000 a year. It speaks to everyone, because it's, how do I take these cheap organic ingredients and make dinner? Just how do I, you know, meal planning, you know, and it's not something most of us feel we have time to do. As we've kind of taken that off of you, we decided to challenge ourselves to feed an entire family organically for what you could get a value meal for $5. And we did a bunch of spreadsheets and documents and costed every little cent and every little ounce of everything, and came up with 15 recipes where you can feed your family for $1 to $2 per serving. And we have those available in the co-op.
That's amazing. And I want to there's a call I want to get in a second. But let me tell folks, if you're interested in getting those Food for All recipes, there's two ways you can do it. You can go into the Common Ground Food Co-op and take a red recipe sheet off the wall, or you can go to WILO's website. We've put up four of those recipes. It's on our website. We have a special page, a hunger page. You go to will.illinois.edu. It's on the homepage. Click on Hunger Symposium, and you will find those recipes. So that's one way to do it. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. We are talking with Andrea Rundell, who's with the Eastern Illinois Food Bank, and Jacqueline Hanna from the Common Ground Food Co-op. We are talking about hunger, nutrition, and feeding people. And I have a caller on a cell phone that would like to get in the conversation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, this is Bonnie Ganny. I have a question for the lady from the food bank. A decade ago, when I was doing food bank runs for the Foster Parents Association, you had pallets of pet food that came, I think it was maybe from Super Value's warehouse damage thing. And my family volunteers for the Humane Society, and one of my pet peeves is folks that are having trouble feeding their family, the four-legged members of the family don't get fed either. Do you still have that available for people so that food pantries can stock pet food for folks too?
You know, we do. When we have it available, we do get it out to our pantries. I always try and encourage all of our pantries in our 14 counties to consider not just food, but also some non-food items, and, you know, that we're looking not only at hunger at that point, but we're looking at poverty. And I do have some pantries that specifically make sure that they keep a little pet food on hand, because those four-legged members of the family are members of the family. I've had some discussions actually with some township folks in rural areas about concerns that as the economy gets worse, that people might turn their pets out, and then we'll end up with half-starved, unhappy animals running around. So
we see a great many turned into the shelter because people can't feed them.
Exactly.
And I think of all those pallets of pet food, at that point I know they were going begging. It was hard to get the food pantries to take it, and they were sometimes selling to a hog farmer by the truckload back then. And I thought, they're probably still getting broken bags of dog food. They talk the food pantries into taking it nowadays.
We definitely try and encourage the pantries to take it. It's not something we really go out and seek, but when it comes into us, we do try to make it move out to folks who need it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call. And we have an email question from a listener, and this is for you, Jacqueline. Mm-hmm. Can you say anything about Latino utilization of the pantry? How about other hard-to-reach minorities? This person is concerned that some programs wouldn't be welcoming of all minorities.
Well, the word pantry makes me think maybe they meant East Tulare Food Bank.
Oh, yes, you're right. I think that is correct. Go ahead.
Hi. Okay.
Talk about, yes, the food bank gets food to food pantries
right.
and soup kitchens.
Right.
People aren't actually going to you. Individuals don't go to the food bank and get a box of cereal.
That is correct. Our business is getting food in as inexpensively as possible and getting it out, you know, putting the food in the food pantry, the soup in the soup kitchen so that people can get fed. If every single one of those agencies had to try and go out and do it themselves, it would never get done. So we make ourselves the middleman there. With regard to minority populations, Latinos certainly are a growing population in this area, and I'm really pleased to be able to say that I think all of our agencies are doing an increasingly better job of serving minority populations, and in particular Latinos. Over 4 years ago, we were serving something on the order of under 10% Latino population, and in the last hunger study that we did, released this past January, we found that we were serving nearly double the amount. Again, I'm sorry, I'm losing my exact numbers, but I think we're serving 14% of our population right now, and that's really to the credit of my agencies, all of whom are looking at, you know, how do we make sure we can do this. I have programs that have sat down and, you know, figured out how to say a few things in Spanish, and then I have programs who've brought on volunteers or staff people who are fluent in Spanish. And some of them are just doing an absolutely bang-up job.
I can add a little to that. I met with Donna Camp, who manages the Wesley Food Pantry at the Wesley United Methodist Church, which is in Urbana.
Right there on campus.
That's right. And she told me that in 2009, the food pantry served 11,399 people, and they serve about 800 to 1,200 individuals a month. WILL was there talking with folks, and there were quite a few Latinos there. There were translators there for the group of people, and it was mostly, I would say two-thirds was African-American and Latino, and about a third were Caucasians that were accessing this pantry. excuse me. And I know that one of their needs is, by the way, the way that pantry works is people go there, they wait for their number to be called, and then they get to pick items off the shelf.
Yes.
Based on their family size. They actually pick the food that goes in their grocery bag, and what they find, Donna was telling me, is that peanut butter, beans, are really one of the most popular items that people take, which are nutritious items.
Need those staple items. People who are going to food pantries want nutritious food. It's kind of funny. I do have people say, you know, people need to make better choices and not choose the chips and things like that. And honestly, what I see when I see people making their own decisions at food pantries about what the kind of food they want staples. They want the beans. They want the rice. They want milk. They'd love to see more meat. and some of these things, I mean, these are moving into your perishables. They're moving into more expensive items, whether you're, you know, specifically going for organic or not. They're moving into expense there. But, yeah, people want good food, and we want to try and get it to them. It's just kind of tricky.
And that's why we're here bringing the food pantry and a food co-op together to talk about feeding people and nutrition. There is a link to obesity when it comes to access to food, healthy food, and nutrition. And I want to mention that the Eastern Illinois Food Bank and Illinois Public Media, we are co-hosting the 4th Annual Hunger Symposium, and that will take place this coming Monday at 6:30 at the Illinois Terminal. which is at 45 East University Avenue in Champaign. It'll be 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. And the focus this year is on childhood hunger.
That's right.
We'll have a panel of experts that will focus on the effects of hunger on children, their families, and the surrounding community. WILL's Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey, will moderate the forum. It's free and open to the public. Again, it's Monday, September 27th, 6:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. in the City View Meeting Center. That's the second floor of the Illinois Terminal. All this information is on our website, will.illinois.edu. Now, let's go into something that many people are voluntarily subjecting themselves to, as well as hundreds of people who have no choice. And what I'm talking about is the SNAP Hunger Challenge. The food banks across the country have issued this challenge to people. SNAP stands for the Supplemental Nutrition
Assistance Program.
Assistance Program, what you might know as food stamps.
That's
it's
right.
A federal program.
Mm-hmm.
In Illinois, the link card is the SNAP, is what you have when you're on SNAP.
That's right.
It's about $4.50 a day to help you get food. That's what the card allows, or about $30 a week. And people are being challenged across the state to voluntarily live on that amount of food.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little more about SNAP, Andrea. And by the way, if you want to read people who are on this challenge and how it's going, go to feedingillinois.squarespace.com. That's feedingillinois.squarespace.com. So we're in this SNAP challenge. I myself took it. Jacqueline, you're going to be taking it.
Yes.
Your recipes from the Food for All program helped me. I ate a lot of beans. I ate a lot of rice. Tell us a little more, Andrea, from the food bank's perspective about this hunger challenge.
What we really want out of this hunger challenge is for people to get an idea of how difficult it can be to try and make ends meet and eat healthily in particular on a food stamp allowance, you know, on a link card allowance. In so many ways, people who have low incomes right now are facing a host of dietary diseases, diabetes and hypertension and obesity. And in the United States, you know, hunger isn't stick figure kids with distended bellies. It's kids who are overweight because they are getting the wrong kind of food, because that's what's cheap, because they're not getting good foods. They're not getting nutritious foods. And so, you know, there are a variety of things we can be getting out of this SNAP challenge, but one of them is just how hard is it to really be able to eat well? Not, you know, steak and lobster, but just to eat well, eat in a way that your body is going to be able to do what you need it to do. And it's difficult. And so we've issued this challenge to people to give that a try. And there are some little rules around exactly how to do it. People are now blogging their experiences and, you know, saying, this is what I found hard. This is what I'm finding difficult. Or, you know, I'm managing to eat, but I am completely bored with what I'm eating because it's going to be the same thing all week because I can't get any variety. People are coming up with some interesting things out of this.
I'm going to read something from the blog, but I want to, if any listener is either voluntarily or is on food stamps because that's how you have to survive, you may call in this program right now at 333-9455 or toll-free 800-222-9455. Again, 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. Or you can email will-talk@illinois.edu. But going to feedingillinois.squarespace.com, let me read an entry from a person on the SNAP challenge. It says here, today is actually my first day. This morning I was reminded how much I take food and beverage for granted. I had a Starbucks, my last one on Sunday, $5.57. And I paused and was reminded that folks live on $4.50 for food per day. This truly will be an enlightening experience. Spent my $18.95 for weeks worth of food today. Aldi's is my best friend. Found myself reading labels to ration serving sizes so not to run out of food at end of week. Started to wonder whether I would have to eat more carbs to fill those hunger pains. When I get gas, I often grab a Diet Coke. Didn't today, but there is nearly $2 I would have wasted. I'm a bit hungry, but my head is so open and receptive to this learning. Any response, Jacqueline?
I think that those are some things that a lot of us are going to be running into taking this challenge. I'm starting and starting tomorrow, and I've been preparing and planning for it. And I said I thought I could do this challenge organically and on local food, and I believe I can. But as I've been researching that and putting together recipes, I think that we're so fixated as a society in general on trying to figure out how to cut our calories and to cut our intake that I had never put together. I made a list of meals I could do and all these different ideas, and then I'm like, okay, great. And then when I went and added up the calories, I said, for the heck of it, let's add up calories here. And I added up calories, and I said, well, I've come up with enough calories to sustain a woman like me who's mildly to moderately active, doesn't have any great demands on her system, but would it sustain somebody who had a heavy physical labor job? Would it sustain an active teenage boy? And the question, I think the answer to the question might be no. And I mean, I learned the last couple of days, I was supposed to start the SNAP challenge on Sunday, and I got very ill Sunday and wasn't able to. And I've been very sick. I was sick the last 2 days. And my husband's trying to balance a full-time job, taking care of our toddler by himself, taking care of me. And what did he do? He bought bagged pasta and sauce and some frozen veggies and made that dinner for 2 nights. Well, those 2 nights of dinner actually would have cost us, like, I think it was a fifth of our entire weekly budget if we had been on food stamps. There are conveniences you take for granted, I think, that, you know, I've heard a lot of people say that. And when I told them, well, I'm going to live on $4.50 a day, the first reaction was always like, yeah, that doesn't sound so hard. And they go, wait a minute, I spend that on my latte.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So I think it brings some reality to it that all of us, I think, probably becomes, I mean, you can probably speak to it more than me, how serious that reality becomes after a couple of days.
Yeah, I did take it, and I was amazed at, I took it before the show so I would have some direct experience with hunger, only really facing it once in my adult life. And the amount of planning it took to, mm-hmm. to, and your recipes were really helpful because your recipes are like $2 a serving, you know. So I bought a lot of dried beans and rice, and I cooked that, and I went without certain things, and I was hungry every day. And the amount of time spent on, when am I going to get this food? How am I going to make it? Took away from time I would spend on other things. So that was my main thing. And then also, very humbling, I asked for help. I had people giving me fresh vegetables. And I know that people who are on food stamps are very resourceful. They're very networking with other folks. And so I thought, well, let me take that value of reaching out for help and helping each other, and let me apply that. And so I ended up doing that. We have a caller from Vermilion County. Let's go ahead, please.
Hi. There are a number of us who are gardeners to one extent or another, and it seems that unless you're really good at it, you have sort of feast or famine from your garden. Is there a way to directly donate excess that would get to people without it getting kind of caught in the pipeline? And where would you suggest people take it, and how should they do this so that it's efficient at the other end?
That's a great question, and I'm glad to hear it. What I recommend you do is go to ampleharvest.org on the web. And what that is a website that's basically there to connect gardeners, community gardeners, home gardeners to food pantries and soup kitchens, to agencies serving people in need. And what you want to do is see if you can put in your zip code, and you can get connected then to any pantries and soup kitchens in your area. And then you can contact them. They would have their information up there saying, you know, what kinds of things they can take, when they can take them, that sort of thing. We're encouraging all of our agencies to sign up there in order to be able to make those connections because, like you say, it's feast or famine in your garden, and when it's, you know, feast in your garden, you might be, you know, sitting there with quite a few tomatoes and zucchinis and trying to figure out what to do with them. And really, there is no need to bring them to the food bank because, like you say, that's the pipeline. We don't need to get that in the way. You could come from Danville and bring it to Urbana, and then I could try and get it back out to someplace in Danville. But why don't you just go to someone in Danville?
Do you give the website again?
Ampleharvest.org.
Great. Thank you. We have a caller, two callers from Urbana. Let's take the caller from Urbana on line two, please.
Hello, is that me?
Yes, go ahead.
I would like to have you tell me the name of the person who's in charge of a food bank and what her name is, and then the other person who has the other, both your names and both of your.
Okay, I can do that. And it's Jacqueline Hanna, excuse me, general manager of the Common Ground Food Co-op.
And Jacqueline Hanna?
Yes, Hanna.
Okay.
And then Andrea?
So that's the food bank.
No, that's the food co-op.
Oh.
Okay. And then we have Andrea Rundell, R-U-N-D-E-L-L.
Andrea, spell it again.
R-U-N-D-E-L-L.
R-U-N-D-E-L-L. And she's?
She's with the food bank, the Eastern Illinois Food Bank.
And where is the food bank?
It's in, go ahead, Andrea.
The food bank's in Urbana. It's in Urbana. We're north of I-74 off of Lincoln. That's where our warehouse is, in that warehouse area.
Okay. Is that, do people come there? Or?
No, we don't serve individuals from the food bank.
Oh, that's just a,
right.
Our distribution center.
That's right. Exactly. Our job is getting the food out to food pantries and soup kitchens.
Uh-huh.
Although I can tell you, ma'am, that Andrea has all the names of the food pantries and food kitchens that receive food from the food bank. So if you wanted to know that information, you could give her a call after the show and she can help you.
Okay. Can you give me her number then?
Go ahead, Andrea. What's the food bank's number?
It's 217-328-3663. You can also...
217-328-3663. Okay.
You can also go to our website and click on the area that says Find Food, and that will connect you.
Okay.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's go on to a caller from Urbana on... No, that call has gone. Okay, that's fine. Let's talk a little bit about healthy food and the food bank. This last year, Provena Covenant Medical Center and the Eastern Illinois Food Bank and a bunch of volunteers actually grew sweet corn on a plot that Provena owned, some land.
Mm-hmm.
And there were volunteers that harvested that. And tell us a little bit about that and how that fits in with getting more nutritious food to people who are hungry.
That's really the point. Is trying to get nutritious food out there, trying to get more produce out there in particular. Provena has a couple of acres in southwest Champaign, and they kindly offered to allow us to harvest the corn from it. And we got, I think, 8,000 ears, three tons of corn from that. But it's really a community effort. It's not it doesn't belong to the food bank. You know, they're very nice to allow us to harvest from it. But we do we did get this done, and we're continuing to get it done by having community volunteers who are interested. And we're looking for people who are interested in helping us manage that process of just taking care of those crops, hopefully expanding into different crops in the next few years. But probably going to be doing corn again this next year as we're sort of sorting out what we're doing. It's just been a bit of a trial run, but we're very happy to have it.
Another thing, when we talk about nutritious food and making it more accessible, whether it's the food co-ops just increasing just slightly above what their cost is for some staple items like organic beans or rice, or whether it's we now have, like, public health has a farmer's market, and, mm-hmm. and other farmer's market take the WIC card. So there's what we often hear, or I hear, that, well, people don't know how to cook this food, or they don't know, they don't have the time, they just don't know what to do. It's so much easier, and I know from being on the SNAP Challenge, I just want to grab the box, I'm hungry, give it to me now. Mm-hmm. The food co-op is addressing some of this. Tell us about that, Jacqueline.
Well, what we're trying to address is the lack of skills that we see widespread across all income levels with how to cook food and how to plan food. This is something that was taken for granted in generations past, but there was this wisdom at a certain point in time in our history that processed food was going to set us free, that it was going to get us out of the kitchens and give us all this leisure time, and it was this boon to society. But what we found, of course, is the amazing impact it's had on our health and on the health of our communities, and also in some ways, I believe, in the health and connectivity of our families. And so what we're looking at is we have people who come into our store all the time who say, I don't know what to do with any of this. I really want to know what to do with this, but I have no clue. I don't know how to make meals. And when I sit them down and talk to them, it's not just, I don't know how to cook dried beans, which, okay, maybe no one's done that for several generations in your family, but it's even sometimes, I don't know what to do with these eggs. And so what we're finding is that it's a whole knowledge of food skills. It's basically home ec that's missing, people need these skills back. How do we plan meals? How do we plan affordable meals? How do we cook these foods that are affordable and nutritious? So Common Ground tries to address that through our Healthy Eating on a Budget class. I spend an hour and a half with folks once a month, and we talk about basic skills in planning for cooking healthy meals. And a lot of what I teach seems super common sense, is maybe common sense, but it's common sense we've been disconnected to for a couple generations. And so we're trying through that class to help people get back in touch with how easy it can be and how much part of your life it can be to prepare food cheap and easily.
And that class is free, and you also have cooking classes, which are of a minimal fee, correct?
Yes, we do have cooking classes. Our cooking classes for owners are always under a very low amount. It's more for non-owners, but everyone can take them. And those cooking classes, we have one coming up on how to cook with bulk beans, so how to use dried beans in many different kinds of foods and recipes very cheaply and easily. We also have one coming up on dried grains, as in how to use bulk rices and maybe some more exotics like millet and quinoa. And we offer those on a monthly basis. During the cool season, we find people don't want to be in the kitchen in the summer.
And I want to talk a little bit about healthy food and micro business and the farmer's market. I'll make a connection for you. The North First Street Prosperity Garden in Champaign is cared for by the Boys and Girls Club, Don Moore's Boys and Girls Club. It is a plot that the city is giving to the North First Street Business Association, which is traditionally, historically, a black business organization. It's in the heart of downtown near downtown Champaign. And these young folks, with a lot of community support, planted vegetables, and then they sold some of those at the farmer's market. And that was an important piece for Sonia Lynch, who is the one who works with these young people, to show them how you can go from a seed to selling and to make some money on this healthy food. And that was an important sort of holistic look at where does our food come from, what does it take to grow it, and how can I both cook it and make money on it. They did all of that in this program. How does that connect to this idea that's fermenting in Urbana, this community kitchen? Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, the community kitchen is not a new idea, and it's actually not even new to our community. People were talking about it about 12 years ago, actually, in the Urbana City Council, and probably in Champaign's as well. I just happened to know the person in Urbana was talking about it. And it's been developing and growing, but it's really gotten some speed in the last year. And there was a young man named Daniel Schreiber in our community who's been a longtime supporter of the co-op and very involved with the co-op, who also started an amazing chocolate business in the last year. He taught himself how to make chocolate from bean to bar and was actually making chocolate that originated from Urbana. And when he decided to do that, he was looking for a place to produce this so he could sell at the farmer's market. To be able to sell any food that you make by health code, you have to make it in a health code certified kitchen. Health code's a little different everywhere you go. I've worked in several different areas, but generally the basic premises and ideas and rules are the same. And to develop a health code certified kitchen in Champaign-Urbana, as I've done this, so I would tell you that I would find it very hard to do for less than $50,000. So if you're going to get into a food business, that's going to be pretty inaccessible. And it was for Daniel. And so what Daniel wanted to do was, well, find someone else with a certified kitchen he could borrow time in. There were a lot of people looking to do this last year because it turned out that there were some people at the farmer's market in Urbana that were selling baked goods they made from their home. And what they believed were in a very safe way, but wasn't meeting health code. And they were asked to all go find health code certified kitchens how to work out of at the same time. And from that moment on, we get literally at least two requests a month from people who want to start small food businesses that would like to use the co-op's kitchen. They're looking for a certified kitchen to start small food businesses. Now, this is important because it doesn't sound like it has anything to do with poverty, but it does. Because a lot of people have very special, especially immigrants and so forth, have special food skills. skills, know how to make certain foods from their families or from their communities that are very of interest either to their niche community or to the wider community, because it's something unique and dynamic they could offer to the community, and they could make it maybe in their spare time with their kids at home, or they can make it after their second job or whatever and sell it at the farmer's market or where have you, or to small stores like the co-op. And so this has been a very traditional way that people have actually helped pull themselves up and make some extra money for their families, is to share these food abilities with food. And yet there's nowhere to make it. And so you've cut off this ability for people to make some extra food and to develop a way to support their families and to bring new and unique foods to our community. And so when Daniel was looking for a kitchen, we had to say no. Most of people I know who have certified kitchens have had to say no because our kitchens are at capacity. Common Ground's kitchen is very tiny. It can fit physically maybe three cooks if you're lucky. And we use it pretty much around the clock. And so we had to say no. And he saw this problem and he said, well, what's going on with the idea of a community kitchen? And at the time, I said, well, we all love it, and we've all been talking about it. And Daniel wasn't the kind of person who just talked about things, so he started working on it. He actually himself, because his business was so successful and he was able to get investors, he was able to rent a certified kitchen and get started with a chocolate factory in his kitchen there. And then he came to me and a couple of community leaders and said, okay, now I've got the kitchen, let's get serious. Let's sit down and make this business plan. What a community kitchen does, it's a certified kitchen that people can rent time in. So you suddenly have a community kitchen and access to you for maybe $15, $20 an hour, and all you have to do is sign a little contract saying you'll pay that, and you have suddenly had the ability to have a food business. And so not only could you have a food business, you could also teach cooking skills, which this community, every community, could really desperately use as a kitchen available to people who want to teach. So
wonderful. We have to wrap up because we have another hour of focus coming up, a different topic, but I appreciate. And for those who are interested in any of these ideas, you can go to the WILL.illinois.edu website. Click on Hunger Symposium. We've got information on organic food. We've got food for all recipes. We have information on the Hunger Symposium that Eastern Illinois Food Bank and WILL are co-presenting this Monday at 6:30 at the Illinois Terminal in Champaign. Please go ahead and look at that. Also, if you want more information on what it's really like to live on $4.50 a day if you're not already living on that for food, go to feedingillinois.squarespace.com, feedingillinois.squarespace.com, and you can read all about folks who are doing this. We have to go now. I thank you, Andrea Rundell from the Eastern Illinois Food Bank, Jacqueline Hanna from Common Ground Food Co-op. Stay tuned for another hour of Focus coming up next.